This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be welcoming back today Darko Butarats.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, it's great to have you back in the studio talking shop with us. Right at the top, I'll let folks know that darkobutarats.com is the name of his website.
It is. And laugh. If you can spell that from pronunciation,
well, yeah, right.
Okay, congratulations.
So I will.
It's okay. It's okay.
I will spell it for our listeners. DarkoButarac. That's a great-looking website, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, very, very good stuff. A lot of our listeners will know Darko as the musical director for the Missoula Symphony, and the conductor as well, of course, and currently also with the Tallahassee and Asheville Symphony. And I confess that's only recently that I've understood that that's what's been going on. So, as I said, welcoming back, the temptation is kind of start off where we left off last time, but of course not everybody listened to our last interview, which was, now as we discussed earlier, 8 years ago.
Time flies when we're having fun.
Yes. So let's just, in case folks are not familiar, Darko was born in Belgrade, Serbia, and grew up in Seattle. And in between now and then, he has performed or conducted all over the world, including China, Argentina, Norway, the Ukraine. I was thinking this morning, are there any continents you have not performed or conducted in?
Africa, Australia.
I'm sure they're on your list.
I'd love
the way you
to.
Travel the world, I can't imagine that's not on your agenda.
I would love to do it, yeah. But I've been very fortunate. Lots of concerts all over the world.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, so getting that out of the way, let's just start with, update us on what's been going on the last 8 years.
Well,
a lot of stuff. A
lot of stuff, yeah. And Missoula, you know, this is... been my home for the last decade, and it's been great to see the orchestra grow. Our budget has basically doubled since my first year as music director, and it's great to see our audiences grow. We serve more patrons in Missoula than we have in our history, which is very exciting. And, you know, some fun projects have taken place over the last few years. The orchestra has performed some really impressive works in the repertoire. Things that pop in my mind immediately are The Rite of Spring, Stravinsky's great masterpiece, and Mahler's Second Symphony, one of the most powerful works written for huge forces, orchestra and chorus. And these are works that really test professional orchestras. And... to see the growth of the orchestra in Missoula is to look at how far we've come in each of the sections, that we've been fortunate enough that we recruit people who come to town and who continue to raise the level of our orchestra. And so I don't think something like these two pieces that I mentioned would have been possible when we last talked. It certainly was not on my radar. I don't think we had the ability to pull it off, but we have now, and it's a huge, huge accomplishment, personal accomplishment for me, to see the orchestra brought to that level. Other labor of love that's taken place is to see our family concerts continue to thrive over the last 10 years. I've been writing them with my friend Creighton James, and, you know, they've really gotten ridiculously complex and complicated at times, but always a labor of love. And ultimately to see, you know, thousands of fourth graders and kids who've now, you know, I had somebody a month ago stop me over at the Guild Brew Pub on the Hip Strip and said, you know, my kid's been going to your family concert since like the first one. I think they're 12 now. So basically they started at 2. And they've gotten the entire... let's say, package of Missoula Youth concert offerings, which is just like, it's wonderful. It's so cool.
Yeah.
And I think they're, you know, they're playing an instrument and they're excited about it. It's great to see when, you know, your work impacts a community.
Yeah. Now, in that time, in that last 8 years, you also started working, as far as I can know, it's been within the last 8 years, you've also started working with Tallahassee and Asheville. And if I'm not mistaken, and just to kind of spoiler alert for the listeners, in case you don't know this, we are entering Darko's last season as we are recording this in fall of 2018. We're entering Darko's final season conducting the Missoula Symphony. And Asheville is the ultimate destination, am I correct? Is that
so? I started working as music director in Tallahassee in 2013, and now Asheville came on the horizon, and I was hired officially in June of this year. So Currently, I'm in a place where I have three orchestras. It's completely nuts.
I was going to say, just for our listeners' sake, for those who are outside the classical world, I mean, or even inside the classical world, how normal is that?
I would say it's not common. Okay. I'd say like two orchestras is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good workload. Three orchestras, just because of logistics, to be music director in three orchestras is complicated. There's people who do more concerts than I do this year. That's not uncommon. But, you know, being a music director is not just connecting a concert. It's also, there's all kinds of other duties associated with a position. So that's where it gets a little crazy. And then also all three places are towns, beautiful towns with small airports, which means, believe it or not, folks, that to go from Missoula to Tallahassee takes longer than to go from Missoula to Paris.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yep.
Well, in Asheville, this is very interesting to me because when I first moved out here to Missoula 25 years ago, almost right away, I would hear people making reference to Asheville, North Carolina, as being almost like a sister city to Missoula. And I got to go there a few years ago and went back because it's a nice place. So a lot of parallels between those two. And I'm not sure about Tallahassee, but...
Tallahassee has it in common that it's a university town. Its great advantage is that it has this incredible College of Music where the talent is drawn from. And it's capital city of Florida. So, you know, there it's a larger place. I think population with county is about 300,000 people. So there's resources and it's an exciting place to make music. Asheville is completely different. Asheville is a mountain town, not a university town as much as Missoula is. I mean, it does have university, but, you know, as we know, the big schools in Carolina are in Raleigh and Durham, etc. So Asheville's, you know, the vibe is it has this like real hippie vibe that exists, and it's that does feel a little like home.
Yeah,
different mountains. It feels more wild here, but it's beautiful there too. So it's something very comforting. Nature is very important to me. Being around nature is very important to me. I draw a lot of inspiration from it, and so to be moving to a place where I will have access to that is important.
We've had a couple of different musicians, at least from the Asheville area, singer-songwriter David Wilcox, brilliant Irish guitarist named John Doyle, I can think of. So, yeah, you have some good neighbors.
It's a great music city. You know, it's incredible how much, especially recording industry, takes place in Asheville. And it's interesting that the Asheville Symphony, as part of its, let's say, longer-term vision, actually has recording projects with bands and musicians who are connected to Asheville. So in fact, I think in a couple of weeks, there's a session with the Steep Canyon Rangers with the Asheville Symphony. And those are cool projects. They've done a CD with a hip-hop artist. And it's an interesting identity to have as part of a community where you are working as an orchestra musician.
Mm-hmm.
Offer some different opportunities.
Darko, in this time that you are juggling between three different symphonies,
mm-hmm.
how do you keep yourself grounded and focused in that time? Because I know from our last interview and from knowing you a little bit personally that you've got tons of interests all over the place, not just musical interests.
Yeah.
So one would assume that some of those things are kind of important in keeping you kind of grounded.
I think the only grounding right now comes from studying scores. That's the one thing which is absolutely consistent day to day. And it's funny, when we talked 8 years ago, let's say that it was on around November 1st, at that point, I would have done one concert as part of my season in Missoula, which would have taken place in early October.
Mm-hmm.
And we would be preparing now our Holiday Pops, which just comes up next in December. So we sit now here, and I already have six completely different programs under my belt. So it's huge change.
Yeah.
And, you just have to keep up. I'm not studying just for what's coming up this weekend. I'm studying what's next month, what's 2 months from now, 3 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
That's the nature of being a professional. It's great. I mean... You know, I people ask me what's great about being a conductor. I say, you know, you go to a coffee shop, you order your coffee, you open your score, and you have your morning in company of genius. This week it's Rachmaninoff. Rachmaninoff, what did you do? Oh my God, how did you come up with that harmony? Why did you write that melody? That rhythm is interesting. Why is it that way? What are you trying to express? What does this piece mean? And Like, that's one thing which is consistent every morning. Mm. And good coffee. That's
yeah, like, must be good coffee.
Good coffee is a must.
Good coffee. This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with conductor and musical director of the Missoula Symphony, the Asheville Symphony, and Tallahassee Symphony, Darko Buterats. I want to ask you a general question about conducting and your approach to conducting.
Please.
I'm going to use a basketball story, though.
Let's
do it. To make my analogy. And I'm going to star you and I.
Okay, very good.
Full disclosure to our listeners, we've played basketball together at least a couple times. And one of the things that I've actually told the story, because I think it speaks to what drives you, I think. You're looking like, what stories
what's
are you
going
to tell? Well, what I remember is we were playing together. We're on the same team. And full disclosure for our listeners, my guest is close to a foot taller than I am. And so he did what basketball players, he goes closer to the basket. You know, I'm on the outside. I'm dribbling the ball up the court. And as I dribble the ball up the court, I dribble it off my foot. Turns over. We head back up the court. Most of the guys that we play would say, nah, no problem. Darko comes up to me. He says, come on, Floridis, get your act together. And I don't think you said act, actually. But the point, the reason I tell that, and the reason I tell that story, initially I was like, wow, that, and I thought, oh, of course, this is what he does. He's played basketball with me for 20 minutes. He knows I can dribble the ball up the court and not dribble it off my foot. He wants me to be better. And I'd say that in fun, but it also speaks to what motivates you. You see someone, and transferring this to being a conductor, want them to be better, want them to be their best.
Yes. Yes, that's definitely a drive. The drive to get the maximum that's possible kind of burns inside me every time I'm on the podium. Now, that's the struggle there, and it's a real struggle, is what's in my head and what the orchestra ensemble player is able to achieve. It's a balance. And the difference between being a guest conductor, you don't have to bring that fire. But being a music director, you have responsibility. Your primary responsibility is to offer your community the best musical experience possible and to improve your orchestra, whatever improve means. And so I think you put it well. You want to get the maximum out of people. You want the orchestra to sound its best. But how you do it is not always telling somebody to get their act together, although that is an important part, and yeah. It's important to be said. I think oftentimes we live in a funny world. We live in a very, very funny world. On one hand, we have when we open the newspaper or you know, watch TV or listen to the news, it's kind of shocking the amount of rudeness that we're surrounded by in life and that we just take for granted. We let it brush off. And yet, on the other hand, it's shocking how much, in a way, we avoid conflict and seek political correctness in some situations where they're not necessarily necessary. Mm-hmm. So it's funny, it's like this two complete polar extremes, mm-hmm. really extremes. And somehow, honesty is somewhere in the middle. Mm. Like, respect for the other person, but then also like a respect for what we're doing. And generally, I use the word try because I don't always do it, I do try to find a balance and to remind people like why we're there. Why are we there? We're not there because you have to play an A natural. We're there to inspire an audience. You inspire an audience, you inspire a community. Like, that's why arts exist. There's no point of having arts if we cannot inspire. Mm. Doesn't matter what it is. Yeah. So we have to inspire. So, yes, how do you get a group to do their best? And that's interesting point. Also, it's very different depending on the ensemble you conduct. If you work with young musicians, semi-professional orchestra, professional orchestra, completely different experiences. And my general approach, the way I think about it, is you can focus on the what, you can focus on the how, or you can focus on the why. Mm. So when you focus on the what, that's working on the very most basic level. John, you have a G natural in your part, you play a G sharp, please play a G natural. And John is like, oh, man, I just dribbled that basketball by foot again. But it doesn't make you feel that great. You know, it's like, that's a level of interaction that's very basic. It's something that you yourself are able to do. Mm-hmm. You don't need a reminder to do that.
Right.
And the better musician you are, the less you're actually, the less a comment has positive effect on you as a musician. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if something is written to be played softly, you say, play it softly. That's, again, it's like, it's obvious. It's there. The musician should be able to take care of that. Now, sometimes you that's not possible, and you have to remind people of the basics. Fine. The how, I think of context. So
I was gonna say,
It's like context. So sometimes a musical problem will be an ensemble issue, let's just say. An ensemble issue is knowing how you belong into the context. And so that may not be obvious from just reading your part, but it could be obvious if you're an experienced musician and you're listening. Mm-hmm. So the better musician you are, you're able to get out of your part, you listen to what everybody else is doing, you know how to fit in. But sometimes the conductor is necessary to say, listen, you cannot play your offbeat if you don't listen to the bass line, let's say, in the tuba or the timpani. So you listen to the timpani and you play offbeat against, and therefore we're together.
Mm. Sure.
Slightly more interesting than that's a G sharp, but not tremendously more.
Yeah.
What's really exciting and interesting for me, and I think also for musicians, is if we talk about why. And how to answer a piece why, like why a piece of music is the way it is entirely subjective and personal. Mm-hmm. So in other words, a conductor standing on the podium brings the why and is able to share their perspective on what this work is about. What did the poet have to say? What did the composer want to express with this work? And it's not, I have to make very clear, the why is not a poetic nature. It's not like, oh, here the sun rises and then the hero comes out on the horse and whatever else. No. The why is a logic of music, a logic of sound. So when the piece begins from the very first sound until it ends, and sometimes that end comes 40 minutes, 1 hour after it began, you want to have a thread of logic, of intensity and release, of contrast, color, basically interest, oral interest. From beginning to end, it has to make sense. And then, if you, as a conductor, did your homework and you know your why, you can bring that why into rehearsing. So, for example, I could say to you, John, it says piano in your part, play softly. And you look at the part and you say, yeah, I know it plays piano. I kind of play piano. Why are you telling me this? I can do this myself. But if I say, John, this has to be threateningly mysterious.
Yeah.
For example. And then what happens, especially if you're in a section of players, if more than one person is playing, then all of a sudden everybody takes their own experience and interprets what you said in sound in their own unique way. And they have to listen to each other more to make sure that what they're doing together actually makes sense within the context. Mm-hmm. But it also then empowers the musician to a level that the musician can then actually bring and say, okay, this is threatening. This is mysterious. And this sound makes it so. And so you can actually solve technical problems by sharing your why. Mm-hmm. And that for me is, when I can get to that level in rehearsal, it's fun, it's engaging, completely different type of music making than micromanagement.
Yeah, and I hear oftentimes, regardless of genre, musicians talking about what's the story of the song.
Right.
And not necessarily in a concrete way in terms of if the music has lyrics and has words, we're following the story. It's just there can be a story with instrumental music, which is exactly what you're describing.
Exactly.
The arc, the
Characters.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for the slightly more musical people in the listening audience, the basics of any musical composition is, at least I should say, in tonal music. Mm-hmm. Okay. If the key area changes, the character has to be different. Composer chooses to change harmony to express something different. Mm-hmm. So if your first character is, let's say, threatening and mysterious, second one comes, it cannot be threatening and mysterious. It has to develop because the harmony changed. Hmm. So just that very simple principle, like, opens up everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And then you look at a piece, you look at a music, and say, oh, what could this be like? If this is this way, what does this make sense to be? And so, like, if I were to say threatening and mysterious, what does it mean technically? What kind of sound is it? Where do I play on the string? what kind of sound am I hoping to evoke? Are the accents edgier or are they softer? Like, so all of a sudden, the entire piece comes into focus once you are able to determine character. And character cannot be determined by whim. Mm-hmm. I can look at a piece of music and say, okay, this should be this way. But it has to make sense with what comes before and what comes after. Mm-hmm. So you try to look for character that fits into the narrative of the whole. So the characters you come up with, you choose on your own, they have to work together. Mm-hmm. And when they really click, then you got a piece. Then you got a performance because the piece then flows and it's like drama and sound for the listener.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. We're speaking today with Darko Buterats. Darko, I opened up the Facebook page to suggestions for questions mm-hmm. for you from our followers there. And Leslie from Missoula asks, and I'm not going to try to embellish this at all. She says, what is your journey?
What is my journey?
I'll let you interpret that however you want.
My goodness. Well, the simple journey is, I was born in Belgrade, at the time Yugoslavia. I immigrated to the States when I was a kid, started playing music in Seattle. Cello was my instrumental love. Ended up doing school at the University of Toronto and Indiana University for grad school. Wanted to become a conductor at the age of 17 while I was still in high school. So it's a path I chose very early on. And considering the word journey quite appropriate because as a result, it's taken me all over the world. That's one journey. Another journey is that I do love journeys themselves. I'm fascinated with travel. I enjoy traveling. It's one of my passions in life for sure. So it's great to be in a position where work takes you somewhere, but then you extend and find some new paths to discover. So I still haven't reached any destination. In fact, I don't have a destination per mm-hmm. se. I enjoyed the process.
How about moving forward with that journey? Do you take time to, I'm sure you do. you wouldn't be in this kind of work and not see an arc or see,
A
destination maybe?
I'll tell you a simple anecdote is that the Asheville position had over 400 candidates for the position. Mm. So it's not a career you can have any expectations in. Believe me, I'm sure among those 400 people, there were probably 50 to 100 people who could do that job incredibly well. And I did my very best to win the job. I won the job. I feel incredibly happy and grateful for it. But you cannot have expectations, okay, you have this, you have this, you have this. Now it's gonna have to lead to something else. You cannot mm-hmm. approach it that way. Mm-hmm. Rather, you appreciate what you have. You work on what you have. You work to give the best concerts you can in the environment you are. I'm lucky that I work with wonderful musicians in three cities this year. That's what I focus on. I want to continue it. I love orchestras. I love the repertoire. I love the musicians. And it's one of the most beautiful professions I could have possibly come across in my life.
Real quick, a little anecdote about your journeys and your travels. One of the things I always appreciate in the conversations we've had and checking on your Facebook page again, that doesn't involve basketball stories.
No.
But is that you go deep with those. I mean, it makes total sense. I saw a post this morning where you were talking about being in a particular area in Greece where you're like, I feel this particular energy. There's incredible energy here. And you realize like, this is the place that gets the most sun of any location on the planet. You go deep when you go into those travels. You're definitely not
I think travel is a great education. And the place you refer to is Delos. It's an island in the middle of the Cycladic chain of islands in Greece. And it's true. There is the Greeks chose it to be the temple of Apollo in the Delian League. And it was actually where all the cash from the Athens, the Athens League of Cities was stored. Mm-hmm. So like it was super holy. It was super important. Why did they choose it? Why? And there's something there when you spend time there, like, I don't know, my attention is just drawn to that island. It's like, there's a vibe. There's an energy that's kind of different than anywhere else in the world. And yeah, then I come across this article saying NASA says, you know, the sunniest place in the Northern Hemisphere is Delos. It's like,
there you
okay,
go.
There you go.
Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah, no, I think approaching when you do travel, I think the more you can learn about a place, the more you get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I certainly seek to travel to, I enjoy travel to places which are, let's say, a little bit slightly more off the beaten path. But even when you go to the beaten path, like Rome is my favorite city in the world. I've been to Rome, I don't know, 17, 18 times. And let's say the first 10 times I would do exactly the same thing. Like every other tourist, you know, you go to the Vatican, you go mm-hmm. see the Sistine Chapel, you go to St. Peter's, you go to see the Colosseum and the Forum and whatever else. And then one trip I realized, you know what? I have 3 days. My days are going to be eaten up if I do the same thing again. I mean, it's amazing every mm-hmm. time to go see this art. It's fantastic. But, you know, I'm going to go visit the 10 churches that are not on the top 5 list. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, it's incredible. It's incredible. The artwork and inspiration in the city is just everywhere. But you have to make the effort to find it. So yeah, when I travel, I strive for that.
You go deep.
Just like in music.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Darko, I promised that when we did this interview, we'd have some fun stuff to talk about. So I've got, here's one for you.
All right.
This is desert island list question.
Yes.
So you're on a desert island. You have 5 pieces you can conduct. Let's just say you've got whatever crack orchestra, mm-hmm. top-notch orchestra. You got five pieces.
Okay.
Your desert island top 5 pieces to dive into and conduct.
Okay. Mahler Second Symphony, that has to be there. I'll go with Beethoven 9, Puccini's Tosca, because I love Rome. The opera is set in Rome, so like mm-hmm. I'm obsessed about Rome. Has to be some Verdi Requiem, maybe Traviata, and then I just left out like 20 other composers I love. Okay, well. Mozart or Bach? Mozart. Let's go with Mozart. Mozart. I'm going to go with Marriage of Figaro.
Okay. Now, an addendum to that, and touching on that, as well as the when you talked earlier about sitting there in the coffee shop with the score and having a conversation with the with the composer. Top 5 composers on the desert island you'd like to just study with.
Top 5 composers.
Yeah.
Dmitri Shostakovich. Hmm. Basically, like Mozart of the 20th century. So then let's add Mozart. I'd say Beethoven, except, you know, unless he's got like a good hearing aid, it won't work. And he's kind of an irritable character, so I will keep him off. We need
he doesn't make the cut.
who had good vibes. Goodness. Who would be? See, like, I know their lives. I know their quirks. It's like, mm-hmm. how can I eliminate this person?
Right.
Bach. To study Bach, I mean, for sure. Stravinsky.
Mm.
That would be mm-hmm. a cool cat to hang around with. And let's go with one. Let's find the late romantic that we would like. No, I'm going to go with Gershwin.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Just to mix it up, everybody else, you know, so we don't get too snobby.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Top 5 guest artists you can have.
Oh, man, you're killing me. Living or dead?
We'll go living or dead.
Okay. It's almost Halloween, so we can can open up the graves. Goodness. Soloists I love. Let's see. Leonidas Kavakos, my favorite violinist currently living. Yo-Yo Ma. Because Yo-Yo Ma. And then you have to get Rostropovich as well, because he's a good vodka drinker.
Okay.
So he was fun. Piano, let's choose a pianist. Daniel Barenboim, I think he's absolutely fascinating. Although he is irritable, seems a little irritable, but he's absolutely brilliant. I would love to talk to him about music. And finally, something else. Oh, a singer. Yes, we need a singer. Maria Callas, for sure.
Nice. That's a good starting five.
Yeah.
Again, to use the basketball analogy. I see cello was well represented there.
See, it's a little bit over.
That's all right. So yeah. Here's a question, a little offshoot of that. Do you get a chance to play cello very much with everything else you're
doing? Oh, no, it's awful. It's awful.
Is that your primary instrument?
Cello is my primary instrument, but you know, with the amount of travel, first of all, you can't travel with a cello unless you're buying a separate seat.
I was going to say, yeah.
So that gets financially impractical very quickly. And then when you come back home and you put the cello in your hands, I liken it to the picture of Dorian Gray in reverse. You know, picture of Dorian Gray was the picture that stayed up in the attic and like stayed young while the person stayed young and the picture got old. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like the cello stays young, but my playing gets old. Like it's not good. It's just, it hurts when I bring it out. And especially because, you know, in my mind, I think of music. I try to think of like, what does it sound like? What could it do? And things I used to be able to do, I can't do anymore. Mm. And that really frustrates me. Mm-hmm. So not as much. I think once this year passes and I settle in a little bit, I think there'll be time to rediscover my first love again.
Great.
Yeah.
Are there other musical genres that you like to listen to and can find inspiration in for symphonic work? In other words, can you be immersed
in what you're saying.
Something else?
I usually find what inspires me most from other musical genres is performance itself. In my life, I would say the most inspiring performances usually have been tied to some kind of folk element. So basically not professional musicians, not learned musicians in terms of conservatory, things mm-hmm. like that, but people who play by ear and in a communal environment. And to see the energy of that performance and to like, it's very inspiring to bring it back to music making on the stage and how you can recreate that feeling of spontaneity, of love, of communing in music, that is very inspiring to me. I live by the, I believe it was Duke Ellington who said, there's good music and the other kind. So genre is not a barrier for me. More interestingly for me is whether it's live or not. So if it's produced, I'm not into it as much. I like to see humans performing.
Okay.
Not machines fixing their voices.
Yeah.
Like, let's see the chops.
Can you think of some examples off the top of your head? Some stuff maybe that's caught you in the last...
Oh, gosh. Recently?
Yeah, recently.
There's been no live music recently. There's no time for live music recently. I'm trying to think. Certainly some bands back home in Serbia when I visit and see there's a couple that I enjoy to see. Goran Bregović is an artist from my home country. He's made it kind of internationally, and his concerts are always kind of an inspiration. Actually, a couple of years ago, watching Queen perform is really awesome. I think Freddie Mercury, like the way he owns the stage is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
And the music is brilliant. And now I guess the movie is coming out. So I'll be looking forward to seeing that. That was an inspiration, although not live. I don't know. I went to Morocco last Christmas and I went to the main square in Marrakesh. And what fascinated me there was that I always thought of Morocco, and it's part of the Levant, so it's an Arabic country. Yet on the square in Marrakesh, people gather around and they bring their drums and they basically have drum circles and they make music communally all over. It's a cacophony of sound. But the drums are rooted in West Africa. The music is from West Africa. And then you realize that it was tremendously inspiring because you see complexity of rhythm, the way they play comes from, it's not isolated. Yeah, that was really inspiring. Mm-hmm. The realization that music making is not an isolated event. It's something that humanity shares. Story of humanity is the music. Mm. We had R. Carlos Nakai, the Native American flute player, visit Missoula a few years ago, and he gave a masterclass. In the masterclass, he gave a very poetic approach. He said, when you play music, you're expressing the pain and sorrow of your ancestors. And it's not meant, he didn't mean it in the sense of pain and sorrow directly, like of the Native American experience and what's happened in their narrative in these lands over the last centuries, but rather that everybody's ancestors suffered for you to exist. And ultimately, that's absolutely true. Our parents have, our grandparents have, etc. And so when you play music, you express their suffering. And I thought, like, that's, like, it's a beautiful way to connect sound into human experience. Yeah. That was very, very moving.
One final lighter-hearted question. Any guilty pleasures among your CD collection or music collection?
You're
come
awful.
On, Darko. Come on.
All right. My favorite guilty pleasure, and actually I think the first LP I ever owned, Rock Me Amadeus, Falco.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. Still have it.
For those of you who are a little younger, please Google Rock Me Amadeus and the video that accompanied
it. And it's interesting. I love this before even really knowing who Mozart was, like before deciding to become a classical musician even.
Yeah.
I think it was 1986 when it came out, and it was like,
that's a fun tune.
It's a great tune.
Oh, yeah. Every once in a while, they'll pop into my head, and somebody will say something, you know, Amadeus Mozart, and I'm like, rock me Amadeus. And I'm rocking. I go right into the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Darko Buteratz. Darko, as we sit here in almost the beginning of November in 2018, and we're looking at the last season here in as a musical director for the Missoula Symphony. What would you say has about this job in particular? How has this job influenced you in the broadest sense? Particularly, it's for lack of I'm making up a word here. It's Montana-ness.
That's a great question. Well, the biggest influence I think is the fact that it is here. So the fact that my first big music director job was in Montana brought me to Montana and made me discover this part of the world, which I didn't know existed. And I really have loved and I'm so grateful for all the people I've met, for the people I've worked with. Our orchestra is a fascinating mix. And what's best about it is people are good to each other and they do their absolute best and they give 120%. That side of it's been very rewarding, and we wouldn't have achieved what we achieved if that hasn't been the case. So on a less interesting, less poetic level, it for me was hugely influential, because I was able to at a very young age, for a conductor, I'm now 41, so like I'm just entering like teenage years for a conductor on like scale, right? You get really good when you're 81. That's when you hit your prime. So for me, it was very important to be able to have an orchestra where we could perform standard repertoire and to get through pieces that in many cases I haven't done before. I look back now 10 years, sorry, it's not 10 years, it's 12 years of being music director here. So that's a total of about 48 full-scale classical concerts. In those 48 concerts, at least three pieces per concert. So we're talking something like 130 to 150 pieces total. Not one has ever been repeated on a concert. We did not repeat a single major work from the beginning of my tenure.
I did not realize that. That's saying a lot.
Yeah. So, but that's what's great about being in this business is we do have 150, 200, 300 works we can do, and we don't have to repeat.
Yeah.
It's not necessary. And from all over the place, you know, we've done Baroque music, we've done 21st century music, we've done everything under the sun. And it's great to look back and to say, you've shared this with your community, you shared this with Missoula, you shared this with people who come to your concerts. They've had an opportunity to see and hopefully discover something they didn't know, and maybe it inspired them and changed their life as a result.
Yeah.
And so for that element, that's so, means so much to me.
Yeah. And you've made Montana your home, primary home, for even with all the travel.
Yes. It's not easy traveling in and out of Montana, as we all know. But you know, the greatest thing about traveling and then coming is coming back. I never in all the times I've landed at Missoula International Airport, I've never ever felt, oh my God, I'm coming back to Missoula. I was like, oh my God, I'm back in Missoula. Yay.
Yeah. Montana does that to folks.
Yes.
DarkoButorats.com. I'm going to spell that again for our listeners. DarkoButorac. DarkoButorats.com is Darko's website. I encourage listeners to go check that out, find out everything Darko is going on there at the website. Great to have a chance to visit with you and talk shop again. And
thank you so
all
much
the best. And I hope that even though you may not be the musical director in the coming months, that perhaps we'll get a chance to visit again down the road.
Definitely would love that.